Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and today we're really elated to have a music legend. She performed at Woodstock, and she, like so many of the great singers, goes by just one name, Melanie. Like Elvis, Madonna, Cher, just known by Melanie. She became the voice of an era performing at Woodstock, and she wrote a song about performing at Woodstock, Lay Down or Candles in the Rain. It sold over a million copies and prompted Billboard, Cashbox, Melody Maker, Record World, and Bravo to anoint her as the female vocalist of the year. She had a real fun song that you may remember called Brand New Key about roller skates. My wife was telling me about her first pair of roller skates and how they fit right onto your shoe. And you would use a key to adjust the roller skates. And as Melanie's arriving here and coming into the studio, we're going to welcome her, but also give you a chance to hear that song and refresh your memory. Melanie, Brand New Key, as we await her coming into the studio. Melanie has arrived here,
yes,
along with her handsome, talented guitar player's son, Bo, and her super agent, Carrie. They're all here, and we've got to find out if Bo wants water or coffee. And
yeah,
Carrie, do you want water or coffee, Carrie or Bo?
I'd be honest.
And come on over here, Bo. And we're settling in now, and we'll be back in about 20 seconds with Melanie and her son, Bo, who's playing lead guitar with her Tuesday night at the Grammy Museum concert. We'll be right back in about 20 seconds.
Hi, this is Bo. Sorry, I helped a lot today.
So welcome back, and could you let me get Melanie on here, and and Bo, could you pick up that phone there?
Absolutely.
And so we have fans from all over the world listening in here, and welcome Melanie. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I thought I was on speaker for
that. Well, you know, this is so low tech here. It's high tech technology. It was in the thing with a laptop, but it's low tech. We're talking into phones.
I'm talking into a phone, and hi. I'm here.
Now, this is amazing
this
how
is
we
so
met.
Weird.
I don't think I told the listeners. We had Dawn Wells on the show recently, and I was talking to her. Another one of Carrie's clients, Susie Singer Carter, asked me to introduce them their film. It was the first film Valerie Harper's had a starring role in since the cancer diagnosis. And then my wife and I were sitting over in the corner, and the lovely Melanie and her son come up and say, can we sit with you? And it was a deja vu. I was telling her, when I was a kid, I had the Brand New Key sheet music,
uh-huh.
and I thought, this woman is the voice and looks of an angel, you know? And I had this sheet music and would practice my guitar to that song, you know? But it was so good to meet you the other night.
Yeah, it was a nice chance meeting, and here I am.
Yeah. Are you excited about, how do you feel about the Grammy? It's Tuesday night, right? All you listening, Grammy Museum... I think it's GrammyMuseum.org,
yeah,
is it?
I don't know what the website
Museum
is.
Grammy Museum LA Live. And it's Tuesday night at, is it 7:30?
Well, I think doors open at 7:30. I go on at 8.
Okay, GrammyMuseum.org. Wow, so you started writing songs when you were pretty young, didn't you?
Yeah, since I was about 4.
Yeah. So, wow, you were.
I mean, probably... I didn't think I was writing songs. I thought that's just what people do, you know.
What a gift. What a gift. It was a divine gift. You had it innately when you were a kid, didn't you?
Yeah. I think it wasn't until Ray Charles covered my song. Now, people had covered my song before then. But it wasn't until Ray Charles sang "Look What They've Done to My Song," and he had an R&B hit with it, that's when I said, "Yeah, I write songs.
That's when it hits you.
Songs that other people can sing, you know." Because before that, it was just I wrote songs because they suited my voice,
mm-hmm.
you know, basically just.
And that's
me.
One of the ones that Miley Cyrus loved and did a duet with you recently, huh?
Yeah, so many people have sung that song. It's Macy Gray and, so many different.
And then Brand New Key's been covered by many people. I think Olivia Newton-John, if I'm remembering. I think maybe some others have done it. Cher, I think Sonny and Cher actually
did it. Oh, yeah, that's right. Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton, yeah.
That's right. That was very funny.
So that's kind of interesting to see how they do it, how they do it different, huh?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I love when somebody... I mean, the New Seekers had a hit with Look What They've Done to My Song,
mm-hmm.
and not to take anything away from the group, because I'm sure the producer and the record company had something to do with it, but they basically just completely aped my performance and my record,
uh-huh.
you know, and put it out, and it sounded like me. You know, so that wasn't as thrilling as when somebody like Ray Charles or Dolly Parton or Macy Gray, you know, record. And actually, I got to see Barbara Streisand and Ray Charles sing it on her TV show. Yeah, that's a whole other thing, you know, and you see someone take it who's really a song interpreter and make it their own. That is, that's the most exciting thing for a writer, I think, to see how their song can be. Although some writers are really picky. I mean, I know that I was once told to sing something, and I added this little pickup note, you know, da 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 da, and they said, no, that's not there. I said, well, yeah, but that's the way I hear it, you know. And some writers are pretty picky about being exact.
Mm-hmm.
I love when somebody takes my song and expands it, or you know, does their take on it.
Mm. Now, you know, you always struck me as like the good side of the force with the whole kind of hippie generation, in the sense that, you know, you had the dark side and the people that OD'd and all that. But when I would see you on Carson or some of these shows, you were so, just had this really good, pure energy. And, you know, you were married, what a long time. And
yeah, 43 years.
43 years, had three kids. Your husband has passed and is in heaven listening to us now. But your son here has stepped up to be, you know, your dynamic duo.
Yeah.
I'd like you all to meet Bo. Did you feel like with your dad, your dad's passing, that, you know, you kind of, you've kind of been, you know, they say a quality of a man is how he treats his mother. I've noticed the way you treat your mother. You're so good to her. I noticed you walking away from the studio the other night, and you're so attentive to her and everything. And now you're playing killer lead guitar.
Do you feel like your dad was kind of like the tough business guy? I get that feeling, right? So have you felt like you guys have had to step up now and be with mom and help her? And
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't know, I can't fill his shoes. I'm doing the best I can, but yeah, I definitely feel like he's helping us, you know, watching over us, and he's still with my mom. I feel very strongly in spirit, and I'm really proud to be working with my mom, and I feel we're a good team, absolutely, and it's an honor to be here.
Well, we're so excited. The Grammy Museum concert is Tuesday. All of you in Los Angeles, just go to GrammyMuseum.org, and you'll see Melanie's picture there and click on the events. And I noticed October you're going to England, and I remember that's exciting.
Yeah. Well, you know, my career started in Europe. I had a number one record in Paris, in France. And I was at the Olympia Theater in Paris for 30 days. Mm. Actually, it was 40 days and 40 nights because I remember it was pure hell. It was absolutely horrendous. I mean, it was so opposite of everything that I felt I was. It was very show busy and glitzy. Mm-hmm. They had 10 different acts, and Gilbert Bécaud, who was like the Frank Sinatra of Europe, was presenting me to the French public, and Bruno Cocatrix, who had presented Edith Piaf, was the presenter of this particular show at the Olympia.
Wow, that's pretty
prestigious. Oh, yeah, and the French press called me the Edith Piaf with a black soul, and, I got rave reviews, but being in this, I shared a dressing room with a camel.
Wow.
Yeah, because there were the Arabian acrobats were one of the, you know, it was like in the old tradition of variety
like
show.
Or something.
Yeah, and one act came on and another act came on, and then the next to the star, which was me, because he was presenting me, and then there was a new pop singer, Julien Clerc, who is now, he is the new it man, you know, over there. So, It was this crazy sort of show busy thing. In fact, when I first went out to do my dress rehearsal, there were many dress rehearsals, and I was horrified. I mean, they had the stage lined with showgirls wearing feathers, and I mean, not much more. feathers, you know, and they had a staircase. Built this huge staircase a la Hollywood, you know, in the 30s, you know. It was giant gilt staircase. And I was to descend from this staircase, and the girl at the bottom would hand me my guitar, and then to this music that was kind of like da 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 da, you know. I was to go to the middle of the stage, and I mean, Bruno Cocatrix wanted me to, like, stand there and, you know, with my arms out and, you know, thank the public. And I'm like, I was so much of an introvert. Mm. Even in my performance style, I was, so I would sit on a little straight back chair, and I'd play the guitar with such intensity that people actually thought I was good, you know, because I was more percussion than I was guitar, but I strummed for all I could, and that's how I, you know, communicated, and it was successful. But Bruno Cocatrix, when he saw this in my dress rehearsal, said, "Oh no, the French public will never like this. No, I know the French public. We need to do something." And that's when the golden staircase appeared and the showgirls lining. But it was still as ridiculous, because when I got to the bottom of the stairs and the music stopped and the showgirl handed me my guitar, I just kind of clumped over to my little chair and sat down. I was so not part of that. But still, it worked, you know, and the people got, and I remember Gilbert Bécaud going over to Bruno Cocatrix saying, no, she has something, you know, very special. And that's how I got away with that. But 40 days and 40 nights of that, my God.
Wow, that was that sounds like a biblical plague or 40 days or 40 nights.
Really,
you know?
It does.
But this time when you go to England, those of you in England listening, it will be much more Melanie, authentic Melanie, because that's what...
Oh, no,
what,
I'm bringing showgirls.
Oh, you are? Oh, okay.
You know,
oh, okay.
No. Totally kidding.
So I don't think there'll be Showgirls Tuesday night. It's going to be you and Bo playing music, and I think you're going to be interviewed,
I think
by the Grammy guy.
An interview, yes, the Grammy guy, we'll call him that for lack of a better name.
Sorry, was it Bruce?
Grammy guy.
I forget the name. I feel bad now I called him Grammy guy.
Grammy guy. Well, I'm hoping that I'm like two steps closer to getting my Lifetime Achievement Award. And, you know, it's really kind of unbelievable that I don't have a Grammy because... All those years and all those hits, and somehow I escaped that.
Well, you know, it's amazing. A lot of great singers like you, and I don't think Elvis had a Grammy other than a gospel album, which you know it was his How Great Thou Art gospel album. But I mean, then you look at actors like Richard Burton, you know, that never had a Oscar and things like that. You
isn't
know,
isn't that incredible?
I joined
the elite.
Yeah,
right?
But. You know, there's music to come. You told me you wrote a new song the other day, didn't you?
I did. I'm so excited. In fact, I think L.A. is good for my creative juices because I wrote a couple of songs, but one I really am excited about. It just has this vibe of it's fun, but it has a little pathos in it. So there's something, you know, when you write a new song, you just feel like you can do anything.
Well, speaking of song, you know, we're just sitting around the Rossi table here, and after we're done with the show, my wife's going to fix up some lunch if you can stay. But I was thinking maybe I'll put on a song for our listeners, and we could, you know, get the guitars out. Maybe you and Bo can and do some music.
It's early for a vocalist,
you know,
but I'm going to do it.
And our guests call in.
Oh, how can we do this?
Oh, what we'll
phone?
Do is we'll put this here.
Okay.
Why don't you guys get your, and we're literally going to do this. And we'll put this down here, and you come back to your seats.
All right.
And we'll put on a Melanie song. As I'm telling our listeners, if you want to call in, I know some of you wanted to send in questions. You can call in 347-637-2379, 347-637-2379. And if you don't want to call in your question, you can text it to 818-850-5915, 818-850-5915. And you can email a question also to richardrossilive@gmail.com, richardrossilive@gmail.com. So I'm going to play a little Melanie from the 70s here. As they're getting their guitar situated, we'll be right back when they're ready to play live for you. And as we're back live here, I've noticed some questions are coming in. While Bo's getting the guitars ready, let's see who's with us here. 818 first three digits 209. Who's on the line?
This is
Hello?
Al Doshna. Hi, Richard.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Great. Al Doshna. This is a producer, film producer in New York. He produced one of my favorite films on Ed Wood, the low-budget film director. And you're live with Melanie. As the guitars are getting set up here by Bo, what would you like to ask or say to Melanie? She's on here with you.
Yes.
Hi.
Melanie. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a comment and a question. My comment is that your anthemic song, Lay Down Candles in the Rain, has been a near religious experience for me from the first time I heard it as a teenager, even to when I hear it in the present day. And you just seem to have put your entire soul into the song. And that was an exhilarating time time for me when I began to have some of the dreams and goals that I would fulfill years later in more recent times, often with alongside Richard Rossi. And that song was, for one, was part of the soundtrack of my life. And the question I have is a bit of a different subject. And you're on a Tonight Show with Johnny Carson that was broadcast on October 8th, 1969.
And I remember seeing that show. I think it was. I think if I remember, it was one of might have been one of your first national interviews on Johnny Carson. Is that right?
That probably is true. Yeah.
Right. And one of the guests.
You had a question about that, Al?
Right. One of the guests on the show was Lon Chaney Jr., who's best known for his role as the Wolfman. And I've always been a Chaney Jr. fan, and he has a lot of fans on Facebook. But apparently that segment was taped over or destroyed along with many others. But it was one of Chaney's TV appearances, and it's known of by many fans, but very little is known about the program. My question is, do you have any memories about the show or any possible interactions you may have had with Mr. Chaney?
All I remember is being terrified because I had never been on major television before, and I had agents and people telling me what to wear and how the interview would go, and I was so afraid. All I could think of is I was such an introvert, and all I could think of was just getting through this without being, you know, bombing, you know. So I was... in my own little universe, which was in a lot of instances that was the case because I was so shy, and I had a hit before I became a seasoned performer, you know, before I could think on my feet, be on the stage comfortably.
What was your first big hit? Was it the song is Lay Down, or was it Brand New Key?
Well,
or?
You know, it was an odd phenomenon. There was a song called Beautiful People,
mm-hmm.
and it was what they called a turntable hit because mm-hmm. the record company didn't see it. You know, what had happened was... It was the beginning of lawyers running record companies.
Mm.
And a lawyer, I won't name him, had just taken over CBS and saw me and just did not get it, just like Bruno Kokatrix, you know. And he just did not see this at all. And so I had released the record on the previous person who was in charge, and they loved it, and we were going to, you know, put it out, big guns and everything. But when this person, lawyer, took over, they did not see it. And so they didn't service radio stations or record stores. But some had already gone out, so it got a lot of airplay. And it was what they call a turntable hit.
Mm-hmm.
That couldn't happen now because with the advent of Clear Channel and not being, you really don't hear a DJ's choice, you know, you hear central programming. So it was a turntable hit. So people heard it. I'd say when I did Woodstock, maybe a small percentage of that assembled had heard Beautiful People.
And that's such
so
a
that
beautiful
was my first,
message about being aware of the people around us and how beautiful they are. And,
you know, to take a minute and look at the person next to you and kind of understand we're all in this together, you know.
You mentioned Woodstock. Sherry, you had a question about Woodstock. What did you want to ask about that?
Okay, Melanie. I just was wondering, what was that experience like to be at Woodstock?
Again, you know, the whole day leading up to my performance, I wasn't hanging out with the happy hippies or anything. I was in my little tent, completely terrified. Every once in a while, someone would come over and say, "You're on next," because I was an easy fill. I had this and my voice, you know, so they could stick me on in between the acts that were setting up or getting there or tied up in traffic or whatever. So I was in my little tent all day and didn't realize till later there was this upper echelon tent, I suppose, and I'm sure I could have gone in because they had amenities and things for the performers there. But, I was so much an introvert that I didn't dare move from my tent. And, in fact, one time that I sort of ventured out, I didn't have an artist pass. A sort of Hell's Angels type started bringing me into the crowd saying, you know, "You're not supposed to be here." And I said, "Yes, yes, beautiful people. You live in the same world as I do." But so anyway, I was like, you know, fighting for my life.
I almost got kept
from the stage. So I was put back in my tent. I did not venture very far from my tent after that. Now, my one beautiful Woodstock moment came when Joan Baez heard me. I developed this deep hacking bronchial cough. Just like demons coming out of me from the deepest depths of my, and it just got worse and worse and worse. It was a nervous thing, you know. I mean, can you imagine just being a person who had never sung for more than a few hundred people ever? Now I'm going to go in front of 500,000. Equipped with my guitar, not a band, not a drummer, not a percussionist, no bass player, no friend, no companion. I was there by myself. I was in England working on a film score before all this happened, hoping desperately that my career might take the turn that I wouldn't be the person people looked at. Be very happy to have been in the back in the back of everything and not be seen and attacked and targeted. And you know, here I was being pushed onto this stage, you know, with 500,000 people. So by the time I actually got on, I had been there about 5 hours, 6 hours maybe more. I arrived by helicopter, ushered to this little tent without my artist pass, and Richie Havens was singing "Freedom, Freedom" for about the 50th minute, you know, and I knew he was terrified because I knew his voice from Greenwich Village, you know, because he sang in the village and I sang in the village.
You could tell in the tone he was.
He was, oh boy, you know, he's going, and so I figured I was going to go on next, but that didn't happen, and again, all those hours later, and then it had started to rain, and I thought, everybody will go home. It's raining. They're not going to stay in the rain. They're going to.
Oh, by the way, this is my son Josh. She's talking about what it was like to sing at Woodstock. You should listen to this. If you're one of LA's top bands here, you got to hear the Woodstock story, Josh.
Woodstock. Well, you missed a lot of it, Josh, but you can maybe you archive this.
It'll be archived.
You've got to listen, Josh, because
they flew her in by helicopter, Josh.
Yeah, I was descended this field. I didn't even know what that was down there. It was people. But it was so much of it. It, from the air, it kind of looked like, what crop is that, you know? And it was all these little heads, hundreds of thousands of them, 500,000. And, of course, nobody knew, nobody expected. So by the time I went on, it had started to rain. I was thinking, a reprieve. I'm going to go home now and be just like it was, because they're going to go home. It's raining, and of course they're not going to sit here in the rain, are they? And just at that moment of reverie, someone came in and said, "You're on next."
Wow.
It was right after Ravi Shankar, and I got to be present during this. Someone of the hog farm commune was passing out thousands and thousands of candles, and right before I went on, the announcer said, "Keep your candles lit," and something very inspirational like that.
And that inspired your song.
And that inspired later, Candles in the Rain. It became the thing to do at a Melanie concert.
And it's now like the big thing with the lighters.
Yeah, people don't know.
Melanie's going to sing live for you, but just since we've been referencing Woodstock, I'm just going to give you guys a few seconds before they perform live. This is the crowd cheering for Melanie at Woodstock. And here she just hit a chord. Take you back, huh?
I don't even know what song I'm about to do.
Thirsty of the Sun.
Oh. That's the song I had just written.
Well, what a voice. Well, let's do it live now. I think you're ready, right, Bo?
I never sang that song again.
We'll just set this here, and I'll be your vocal mic.
Okay.
And Melanie and Bo, you're going to get a rare live song.
Okay. Oh, gosh.
That's all right. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, live worldwide, Melanie's doing a song for you.
What they done to my song, Mom. Look what they done to my song, Mom. It was the only thing I could do half right, and it's turning out all wrong, Mom. Look what they done to my song. Look what they done to my brain, Mom. Look what they done to my brain. Well, they picked it like a chicken bone, and I think I'm half insane, Mom. Look what they done to my song. And here's the only thing I do in French. Ils ont changé ma chanson, Mom. I was thinking Maurice Chevalier. Ils ont changé ma chanson, ma. C'est la seule chose que je peux faire. Et ce n'est pas bon, ma. Ils ont changé ma chanson. Well, maybe it'll all be all right, ma. Maybe it'll all be okay. Well, if the people are buying tears, I'm gonna be a rich girl someday, Mom. Look what they done to my song.
is one of the songs you just did a duet with Miley on. Ray Charles has covered this.
Right.
But you guys are great together, the harmony, mother and son and the lead. But what a great, great song. And you know, that's you, because you're the pure artist and the commercial lawyer guy and corporate guy.
Right,
you've
right.
had to deal with all that. But
yeah.
you have this song that comes through you, and yet people come and do all kind of weird stuff out there in the business side of it.
Really? People have no clue how hard it is for artists. So I don't criticize anybody. You know, if you're out there doing it and whatever, you know, people go through and whatever it looks like. I know people see Miley and they just sort of, oh, well, you know, that's terrible. But, you know, people do what they have to do, and mm-hmm. it's, you know, you can't really fault an artist, because mm-hmm. what you've got to go through to get out there and mm-hmm. and be up in public and, you know, put your best self up there, you mm-hmm. know, when you're performing. You know, you can't let all that nonsense get to you. You're just expressing yourself. You're there for the people.
Well, you have just gotten better and better as an artist, because it's like wine. It just gets better.
Yes.
We're all set up, so are you able to do another one since we're all set up?
Who knows? I it's early for a voice.
It
you know,
is,
so
yeah.
I'm gonna,
Hashibai might be a nice one.
Yeah, that's a nice one. This is a kind of newish.
Okay.
Newish one.
And what's it called?
Hushabye.
Okay. This is one of the great folk singers that has performed with Johnny Cash, the whole Dylan era that she came out of, and she's better than ever. So get to the Grammy Museum this Tuesday night if you're in the Los Angeles area. But here we go, another song.
Hush-a-bye, baby, hush-a-bye. Don't you cry. Hush-a-bye, baby, hush-a-bye. Don't you cry. After all is said and done, Daddy's a hero, you are a widow's son. And after all the fighting's done, life will take over, and no one will have won. So, hush-a-bye. Hush-a-bye, baby, hush-a-bye. Don't you cry. Hush-a-bye, hush-a-bye, baby, hush-a-bye. Don't you cry. After all is said and done, life will take over. No one will have won. And when the war's gone on too long, life will take over, and there will be more to come. And no one will have won. So, hush-a-bye. Hush-a-bye, baby, hush-a-bye. Don't you cry. Hush-a-bye. Hush-a-bye, baby, hush-a-bye. Hush-a-bye, baby, bye-bye. Hush-a-bye, baby, bye-bye, baby, hush-a-bye. Hush-a-bye, baby, bye-bye. Hush-a-bye, baby, bye. Hush-a-bye, baby, bye-baby, bye-bye, baby. Hush-a-bye. Hush-a-bye, baby, bye-bye. Hush-a-bye, baby. Bye-bye. Baby, bye-bye. Hush-a-bye, baby, bye. Hush-a-bye, baby, bye-bye.
Wow, that was great. Wow. Wow, that was great. What a duo.
Thank you.
Wow. Wow. Wow, has life gone by? I remember seeing you when you were Bo's age on TV and buying up your sheet music of Volkwine's music in Pittsburgh. My dad ran a music store, so we're always running down and getting music sheets.
Yeah.
And here Bo is performing with you, this little baby boy, who was once the Hush little baby boy, is now playing with you. You guys sound great together, and your voice is as great as it's ever
thank
been.
You.
Wow.
Yeah, early morning scratchiness, but I've never been known as a pretty singer.
Well, it adds to it, you know. Madonna used to take a little crumbled up potato chips and keep it in her throat when she wanted
chips
to sound scratchy, you know.
Oh, no, you know, potato chips are a real good lubricant.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I eat potato chips before I go on because it kind of smooths the vocal cords. But maybe she needed roughness. I don't know. I guess potato chips have a double meaning. So for singers, but for me, it's a smoothing thing.
It is a really interesting trick. I can't believe how the time's gone by. I guess the best place to keep up with you is MelanieSofka.com, Melanie, and then your last name, which that could be a trivia question because you're like Madonna and Elvis,
yeah,
and we just know your name.
Yeah.
But your last name, MelanieSofka, SAFKA.com.
It's my new EP.
Oh, tell us about your new EP,
it's,
Ragamuffin.
Ragamuffin. My mama would always say, put clean shoes on. You look like a ragamuffin. I kind of like ragamuffin, you know.
I love it.
And I grew up a ragamuffin. So, and I always dress a little, you know, patchy and like I always think I dress like a comfy couch, you know, with mismatched throw pillows and stuff like that.
Well, but you were hip before it was hip to do the mismatched
thing.
Totally.
I thought I invented the 60s, really.
Because
I was, like, in a very provincial area in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. I grew up in New York, but then when I was a teenager, at the worst possible moment, my parents moved to this really little town in New Jersey, and I was just instantly regarded as odd, you know. I don't even know why, you know. I didn't go out of my way to do that, but that's how I was perceived.
Well, with the kind of talent you have, you're not going to be a normie. There's
I
no
wanted
way
to blend, believe me. When you're 14, you want to blend. So.
But well, you were so pretty, though. You that must have. I mean, that, did that compensate the guy thinking you were so pretty, or
never
did you
thought that? You see when I was, and I look back now, and I think, what was I thinking? then I just felt I wasn't pretty in that normal sense, you know, of like
cheerleader girl.
No,
or something.
Not at all. And so to me and where I came from and all of what I grew up with, I did not consider myself pretty.
Yeah.
Now I look back and I think, wow, I wish I could have enjoyed that.
Yeah.
But
because the that was always the second thing people would say is great songwriter, amazing voice. But everyone I would hear, the very next thing is, and oh, is she beautiful? That was what everyone would say when they would talk about you.
That is so incredible.
Yeah.
I wish they said it to me.
Well, you know, they did a survey, and something like 90% of teenagers and people in their early 20s, even the cheerleaders and the jocks you think would think they were all that, something like 90% said when they look back on teen years, 20s, said they felt awkward, they didn't feel attractive.
Yeah.
So we all felt that way.
It was especially being a little I had odd thinking, you know. Mm-hmm. I was, because you, when you're an artist, you think a little outside mm-hmm. of the norm. So I was just right from the get-go in school, not considered one of the popular kids, you know.
Yeah.
I sat at the nerd table.
When you came to our table at the screening, you said, this is where I'm comfortable, off in the corner, because my wife and I were off in the corner. By the way, Bo, those of you, if you're joining us late, that lead guitar playing and those male vocal harmonies that were so blended harmoniously with Mom, this is Bo, and we're running out of seconds here, but Bo...
honored to be here, man. Thank you.
Yeah, what's your feelings about the music, about life, about the things we've been talking about?
Yeah, in 2 seconds flat. Why don't we play you out. It's very inspiring
to be working on Mom, and you know, we're actually mixing a record right now. I feel like my dad's actually with me in spirit mixing
this record.
It's live in Australia. It was a beautiful recording with a wonderful band, and it was just great people, and we're working on that. So yeah, and I'm just honored and look forward to sharing lots of music with you all, with my mom, and yeah.
Yeah, Tuesday night at the Grammy Museum. We're really looking forward to that. Yeah, that'd be kind of fun to jam out. Are you tuned to pitch or?
No, he's in 432.
Oh, you're in 432.
I'm a little lower.
Oh, okay.
Like 8 cents lower.
But you want to play something else, or did you? Do you want to play some music? Or?
Yeah, what do we want to play?
What song?
I don't know.
We gotta do Brand New Key.
This is the big hit, and this is the one that when we were on our roller skates, we always thought about this song.
I got a brand new pair of roller skates. You got a brand new key. I think that we should get together. Try them out, you see. I've been looking around a while. You got something for me. Oh, I got a brand new pair of roller skates. You got a brand new key. Boom, 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 ba da da da. I ride my bike, I roller skate, I don't drive no car. Don't go too fast, but I go pretty far. For somebody who don't drive, I've been all around the world. Some people say, this is my thought I will leave you with, I've done all right for a girl. I got a brand new pair of roller skates. You got a brand new key. Oh, yeah.
That was great. You sure have done all right for a girl, I'll tell you. Well, we ran a little over time, but that's okay for the grace that they give us to go a little bit over time. And you have done all right for not driving and just going around, because Carrie is a good at driving you around, so that compensates, huh, Carrie?
Yeah.
Anything you want to say, Carrie, before we go? This is Carrie, the agent for Millie.
I just want to say this is... fantastic. I met Melanie years ago when I was like 19 years old, and I went to one of her concerts in Chicago, and little did I know that like some 40 some years later we were actually going to be working together. So it's a real privilege, and now I got to know Bo, who is an unbelievably talented composer and guitarist. So that's all I'll say. And Richard, thank you so much for having us here.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Richard.
Oh, you're most welcome. We love you. And Carrie sent me some pictures that were just great of him meeting Melanie and when she first blew up. I think it was probably about 72, and he had the little 70s mustache, and he was kind of starstruck meeting Melanie. Here he is now, the agent for Melanie.
I think he was a gatecrasher.
Yes, I was. No, I had tickets for the show.
He had tickets
we
for the show.
Backstage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for tuning in. And everyone, this link is now good in perpetuity to share if anyone missed the show live. And we'll look forward to seeing you all Tuesday night at the Grammy Museum. Melanie and Bo will be live, so... thanks for tuning in. God bless each and every.